bring you warm greetings this morning. My wife and I are teachers at Redcliffe College, and we are really very grateful for the church, for your friendship, support in different ways. And I think some of you have also supported our Strategic Leadership Fund, which has helped brought many students from all over the world to study at Redcliffe. I also find it a nice privilege to come about maybe once a year to renew ties. And today we are looking at this passage from Ephesians chapter 6, and the title that was given for me to prepare is on spiritual warfare. I want to begin by asking this basic question as we approach this passage of Ephesians 6 verses 10 to 20. Who are these principalities and powers? And behind that question is to reflect together the influence of worldviews. In the Bible College, we teach our students that as we approach the biblical text, we bring a certain worldviews or presuppositions that will influence the way we interpret scriptures. And our interpretation of this text, or how we are going to engage on this whole idea of what is spiritual warfare, how would Christian engage with the principalities and powers of the world, to a large extent will be determined by our worldviews. Maybe in a simple language, our worldviews is almost like a lens that we put on, and often are fairly unconscious. And I think of in a context like Britain, where some of us may have grown up with a certain worldviews, or our children grow up in a influence of, say, secular worldviews. Or people who come from Asia, maybe when they read this passage, they come from, although all of us, maybe many of us are Christians today, we may bring a certain animistic worldviews to Ephesians chapter 6. So to a large extent, we need to be conscious of a certain lens that we bring in interpreting Ephesians chapter 6. For example, the biblical worldview informs us in this Apostle Paul talking about wrestling not against flesh and blood in verse 12, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So everything that is earthly has its heavenly counterpart. And everything that is heavenly has its earthly counterpart. Now, sometimes this worldview is a bit far removed from us. For example, people who have studied philosophy say that even those of us, maybe who are 50 years and above, could be influenced by a certain sub-biblical worldview, what they call influenced by this deism. Deism is a thinking that is very popular in the 50s and the 60s that influenced many Western churches, including Baptist churches. We grow up in a certain cultures where God is out there and we are here on earth. He has created the world and He let it live. He is so far removed. So one of the professors who have influenced me in my studies of spiritual warfare, and in fact he wrote an article entitled Spiritual Warfare, is an anthropologist called Paul Hebert. And he went to work in India, and for the first time his views of spiritual warfare changed. And he wrote this very famous concept that influenced many missionaries from the Western church going out to Africa or to Asia. And this article is entitled the excluded middle. Now, so he says, a lot of us in the West have this belief about God out there in heaven. We believe God as Christians. But then we also have this worldview about human beings, society on earth. But we have nothing in between. This whole idea of principalities, rulers, Paul did not just speak about God and Satan or God and man. But in the biblical worldview, there is this acknowledgement of certain personal realities of evil spirits that's at work. So it is not a disconnected spiritual and earthly realm. And that is why many of us, if we are honest, when we read a passage like this, we feel a sense of foreign context. We don't quite know how to relate this God and Satan out there in the heavenly realm, and how do I today in the 21st century apply this wrestling against the powers and principalities, because I don't see them. And that is partly influenced by a second major worldview in the Western world, but it is also very popular in communist countries and in modern Asian and African cities today. And this is called the materialist worldview. And this worldview is deeply influenced by what we may say the Enlightenment thinking, or the secular worldview. This idea that there is no God, there's no spirit, no Satan, no personal evil. In the world, there's evil and good, and there is no real realities of this idea of a personal Satan or the existence of a devil. Satan is an illusion. It is something that we created. Anything that cannot be rationally argued, logically proven, scientifically tested, these are unreal realities. So it's very difficult for people outside the church to understand this whole idea of spiritual warfare. And likewise, if we are not conscious of this lens, although we may acknowledge ourselves as Christians, we read the Bible, but our worldview may be deeply materialistic. And sometimes we are not conscious about it. And that's why we read this passage, we go out, we may not really see how it's connected to our daily family lives, to our work. You know, from Monday to Friday, this whole idea of a spiritual struggle may not be prominent in a materialist worldview. Of course, there is always this danger, the other extreme of the materialist worldview. We find that in animism or in some Asian cultures or in some churches, say Pentecostal churches, where there can be this other extreme of looking for the devil under every bush. You know, everything is attributed to something spiritual, and there's this idea. But I want to present that a way to bring this integration against an overly spiritual or deist or a secular materialist worldview, what the Bible is saying to us about engaging against the authorities, the powers of this dark world, is an integrated view that there is an inner reality of us, everything that we do, that is an inner spiritual struggle that is integrated, not separate from the outer realities. And particularly in the Western church today, we find that we need to be seeing that these principalities and powers are not just in a personal being of Satan, but Satan could use institutions, systems. And what are those empires, those domination, those powers that are holding on people in bondage? And these two realities are actually integrated. And we will try to see how this works on my second point. How do we put on the whole armor of God? So the first point is to say that in order to answer this passage, how to put on the whole armor of God, we need to be reflective and aware of what are those worldviews that influence. Well, we all come from these different positions. So for the Apostle Paul, the challenge for the Ephesian church is that we are to put on the full armor of God, or in another version, it says the whole armor of God. So this approach is not so much that we take each equipment, like the belt of truth in verse 14, or the breastplate of righteousness, and then we spiritualize it as morals, righteous, truth, value. But all these are equipment, sandals of the feet, helmet of salvation, shield of faith. These are total description for the Christian that once you were under the bondage of the evil one, but now you are in Christ, you are to put on the full equipment of God in order to defend yourself against the attacks of evil. And we want to illustrate in a number of practical situations, how do we put on the whole armor of God in terms of the practical case studies. The first is, I would say, very challenging for us when we read this passage, is to discern that Satan, while in the West, sometimes appear in personal evil and personal beings. His tactics are much more subtle and cunning. In fact, in this verse, we have this idea of the wiles of the evil one, that Satan is quite cunning. Now, he used different strategies. And in the West, people say that one of his most effective and cunning method in the Western culture is to tell people that Satan does not exist. So when we read passage like this, I think the problem for a Western or even young people in Asia or communist country, atheistic communities, is Satan does not exist. So while sometimes in Africa, those of you who have gone and visited churches in Africa, you may find that there is a much more awareness of personal realities of the evil one. But I think in the Western cultures, for example, one way that Satan has worked is what we call the secular culture. And this secular culture is characterized by a liberal intolerance of beliefs, any other belief system. So we find this in the media. We find this the moment you go outside the church, in the workplaces, that atheists or relativists, while they pronounce tolerance and we must have openness, but what we find today, especially for somebody like myself coming from another culture, I begin to realize that while the church was said to be very intolerant, the culture that is operating in the Western world today is quite intolerant, that there's only one relativistic paradigm to engage in the public truth. And this kind of working hypothesis, they say, this way of looking at things can be quite satanic. Although the moment you say it, you find it's many people would challenge that. For example, individualism can be quite influence. Not that individualism is a bad thing, that we all read the Bible like this passage from a very individualistic point of view. But Paul, in talking about the whole armor of God, is talking about the whole church engaging in spiritual battle. Now that's difficult for us because we tend to bring a highly individualistic perspective. Now, I think if we are true to the scriptures, we find that scriptures challenge and unmask this kind of wiles of the devil. So while we may not be engaging in terms of flesh and blood, but we are engaging with systems and powers that are dominating masses and quite powerful in influencing impenetrable barriers for us to bring the gospel when people operate on this kind of paradigm. Or the scientific worldview, that unless it is logically proven, it is not true. For example, many belief systems may not have rational or logical justifications. Say the human rights, the statement on human rights. It is very hard to put forward a logical justification, but nevertheless, they are reasonable. This kind of belief that they are evil in certain societies where there's no freedom, likewise, we find in scriptures the reality of God and Satan. While they cannot be logically proven in a rational way, experiences of life and history will tell us that God and Satan do exist. Secondly, another second illustration of putting on the whole armor of God is that the world today is under a system that oppresses the poor. That means Satan is at work in many parts of society where the powers are expressed not just in a personal way, but in a social, structural, and institutional way. It could be religious systems. Say, there could be a caste system in some Hindu societies. If you are born in this certain caste, it is very difficult for you to move into other caste systems. Or in Muslim countries, there could be this world system that oppresses certain belief system. But likewise, in the world trade system today, many studies have shown that the trade system that we have today generally benefit the rich and the global north countries. And despite all the so-called aids that we give to Africa, people say that the debt system, the interest payment from poor countries far exceed all the so-called donation that rich country would give to the poor. So if you are born in a poor community, in a poor nation, the trade system today is quite oppressive. And the challenge for us to engage against these powers is to unmask them. When Christians who read the scriptures and imbibe these values of justice and a preferential option for the poor, including the migrants in our society, then we read with a different lens. We seek to demonstrate the system of fairness, these values that love the poor, because we realize that many a times the poor are made poor because of certain systems of powers. A third aspect where the church are to put on the whole armor of God, where truth, righteousness, peace, faith, and salvation are proclaimed, is when we find, for example, whenever the church is under attack. You know, Satan attacked the early church, and we can learn from these lessons of church history, both in scripture but also in contemporary world. For example, we won't have time to look at them. If you read Acts chapter 1 and 2, we talk about how the early church developed. But very quickly, from Acts chapter 3 onwards, 3 to 6, Luke highlights from the history of the church as a church under attacks of Satan. So quite likely, when Paul wrote to the Christians in Ephesians, he was talking to the church that is under the Roman domination, not only as a system of power, but also where the church was physically attacked. And so when Paul was encouraging the early church in Ephesians, they look back to the early church in Acts, where they were under attack. So we find, for example, today, still many churches. We recently, last month, we had email from a student who's planning to come to study at Radcliffe from Nepal, just last month, where the church was burned. We think about even countries like Sri Lanka. We find that sometimes in the West, we think about the Buddhist world as something that is very tolerant. The Buddhism in the West presents religion as a very kind and tolerant religion. And that's the only picture we have. But last month, I was on conversation with a girl who has studied law in this country. But she was here because of a scholarship in the army in Brunei. And she now has to go back to Brunei to serve in the army. Brunei is a Muslim country, and serving in the army will not allow you, if you are a Malay Bruneian, you must be a Muslim. There is no provision for a Brunei Malay serving the army to be a Christian. So in many ways, the church is under attack. But in all this, we find that where Luke was saying, well, in some situations, Satan attack through external persecutions. In other situations, Satan attack through moral compromise and disunity. So, for example, in the book of Acts, Ananias and Sapphira, where Peter said, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy Spirit? So Peter and the early church, including Paul here, is reminding us many a times in the church where there is this, Satan can come in and brings disunity. Say, for example, in the book of Acts again, there's Greek-speaking widows and Hebrew-speaking widows, and there was this disunity. So the lesson for us in all this is that whatever worldview we may bring that influence and colour the way we interpret Ephesians 6, we can find actually Satan is still actively at work. And the challenge for us then is to recognise this. I will close with a very simple contemporary joke that they say is about Jesus and Satan, and you see how it colours our idea. Jesus and Satan was having this argument about who managed to get the most out of his computer. And there was this battle. And God says that, okay, I'm going to set up a test that will run for 2 hours and judge who will do a better job. And both set up working on the computer. And you know, Satan is quite active in the internet world. He was very good, you know, doing Word document, PowerPoints, and downloading and sending out emails. And Jesus was maybe a bit of a learner at this point. And then suddenly, just when the second hour was about to end, there was a lightning flash and the electricity, the power was cut off. And Satan was quite upset. He couldn't get on the work. He was furious and to no avail. And after that, when the electricity came back, Satan said, scream, I've lost all the power, it has gone off, what happened to my work? And then looking at Jesus, Jesus sat and smiled, and at the final point, he pushed the button, print, and all his work came out. And Satan said, how did he do it? God smiled and said, Jesus saves. If you understand. You know, I think it's a bit pathetic, isn't it? When we think about this Satan and Jesus in the 21st century, it's only through metaphor and symbolism. And the challenge of Paul is really that every day in our lives, if we are conscious, God is saying the disagreement with our brother and sister, the things within the church that are going on in the world, Satan is actively at work.